It's time for All Things Northwest with Northwest Missouri State University President Dr. John Jasinski. Each month, Dr. Jasinski visits with community and educational leaders about exciting developments and collaborations happening throughout our region. Support for All Things Northwest comes from Family Eye Clinic in Maryville. Dr. Drew Garwood offers patients eye exams, diagnosis, and treatment of eye injuries, as well as glasses and contact lenses. And now, the 10th president of Northwest Missouri State University, Dr. John Jasinski.
Welcome to this month's edition of All Things Northwest, a show devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. We highlight the great work and the great play, the collaboration, and the developments throughout our region, and please know there's so much to celebrate. We here at Northwest Missouri State University and your public radio partners, KXEV, KRNW, hope you are enjoying our incredible weather and the potpourri of flower blooms across the landscape. I am pleased to welcome you to the April edition of our show. We will be talking with Dinah Linville, instructor in the Department of Mathematics, Computer Science, and Information Systems at Northwest Missouri State University. That's in segment one. And then in segment two, we'll be talking to Lieutenant Mike Sepperly of Northwest's University Police Department. He also serves as the Emergency Management Director. Thanks for joining the All Things Northwest team, and we hope you enjoy this month's edition. To begin, I welcome Dinah Linville, instructor in the Department of Mathematics, Computer Science, and Information Systems at Northwest Missouri State University. Welcome, Dinah, to All Things Northwest.
Great. It's great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you, and before I jump into the questions, I'll just give a quick bio for our listeners. Dinah is an instructor in the Department of Math, Computer Science, and Information Systems I just mentioned. Her focus is K-12 outreach. She's a Bearcat, earning both her Bachelor of Science in Computer Science and a Master's of Science in the School of Computer Studies. Prior to teaching, Dinah spent 9 years as a PC specialist at Northwest before accepting a full-time faculty position. She's been involved in solidifying connections between higher education and the K-12 community through her work with Google Grants and her work with developing dual credit courses here at Northwest. Her most recent honor we'll talk about actually during the interview, the 2015 Dean's Award for Excellence in Teaching from the College of Arts and Sciences, and the 2016 Governor's Award for Excellence in Education. When she's not in the classroom, Dinah enjoys spending time with her family on the farm, attending her two daughters' many activities, reading, and baking sweet treats. Might have to talk about that too. Dinah, again, welcome. Thank you for joining All Things Northwest. And we'll just start with talking about computer science. Well, why? Why computer science?
Well, it's kind of a funny story. When I was in high school, I enjoyed math, and I didn't really know what direction I wanted to take when I went to college. And my high school principal at the time actually encouraged me to go into computer science. So I came to Northwest, I put that down as my major, and I never looked back.
Just so. Never knew that, oh, later on you're getting recognized by the governor for teaching award for excellence. But what a great story. It talks about the importance of mentors and role
Absolutely.
Models and people saying, but you've got some aptitude here, kind of go into that. But you put that down at Northwest like, hey, I'm interested in computer science, but you weren't really sure, right?
I was not sure at the time. I'd never taken a programming class or even, you know, worked on a computer at that point. So it was a new experience for
and
sure.
So you got involved at Northwest, and what what happened? I mean, obviously it just it was a blossom there and just, learn a lot of new things. And
yes, it was probably my junior year when I knew that that was the direction that was right for me. So I just continued on with that.
And so you obviously then worked at Northwest, but then teaching was a calling in some way, shape, or form. How'd you get into teaching?
Well, I actually, right after graduation, I taught some courses at the Northwest Tech School here in Maryville. And it was during that time working with those students that I really decided that I wanted to go into teaching further. So I began working on my master's at that point. After that, I adjunct taught for the computer science department at that time. While I worked as a PC specialist, and then a full-time position came open, and I accepted that.
And we'll talk about computer science and information systems and all the areas. But before we do, I want to just for our listeners' sake, can you talk about your approach to teaching?
Well, I take a very engaged approach. That has been a staple actually within the computer science department for a long time. And so I've had many mentors who have encouraged me to follow that. And so I like to use real world examples. I like to engage the students working on programs. And I really like to work one-on-one with them while they're working. And I feel like that allows me the ability to really approach them in the way that they learn.
Well, and it's so good to hear that, because sometimes when you're on the road, I think there's some thoughts out there that higher education faculty members don't connect up to the real world, or just straight lecture and lack of engagement. You're saying you do use those real world examples, and you do engage students and meet them where they're at.
Right. One of the courses that I currently teach, Dr. Judy Clark taught prior to me, and we've kind of revamped the curriculum, but one of the things that she had done previously that I've continued to do is a client-based project where we, have a client within the community, and we have the students actually work on a website for that client, and that just gives them that real-world experience. It gives them the experience of communicating with a professional, and so I've found that to be very valuable within the classroom.
Let's talk about some of those offerings then. Our computer science and information systems offerings, there's so much history in that area, obviously, and yeah. So many great faculty over the years.
Yes.
But talk about some of our offerings right now.
So currently, we've kind of changed up the major a little bit. We have five different majors within the department. We have a management information systems major. We have a business education, business technology. We also have a multidisciplinary major, the interactive digital media. And the computer science emphasis is housed within our area. And then we also have the computer science major. And recently, our computer science major, we have made changes to that curriculum. So we've incorporated emphasis areas. So we have three emphasis areas: the mobile development, data management, and information assurance and security. And these are kind of trends that we are seeing within industry. And so we are tailoring our majors so that we can cover those areas for our students. There is also still a very general CS emphasis that they can follow if they want, so we have that as well.
So our listeners of All Things Northwest hear a lot of offerings tied to industry needs. How do you pick up those industry needs?
So we have a very strong professional advisory team, which I'm sure you're aware of, and we meet with them annually, and we've got some great members from a lot of different companies within the area, and they have just been very supportive of Northwest. And during this meeting, we talk about curriculum issues and issues that they're seeing within industry. And so they're able to give us feedback on our curriculum, which allows us to change our curriculum to meet the needs of the students, because we want them to hire our Bearcats. And so we look to them for that insight.
We talk a lot about being profession-based at Northwest Missouri State University. And this is a good example where your area, your department taps into the professionals. You reference jobs and those obviously placing interns, but also job prospects. What are some of those job prospects out there, and how do we do?
Well, there are many job prospects at the moment. There's some statistics that state that by 2020, 51% of STEM jobs will be in computer science-related fields.
STEM being science, technology, engineering, and math.
Yes. And if that continues, there will be approximately 1.4 million computer science-related jobs over the next 10 years. But we have a deficit in that we're only approximately going to graduate about 400,000. So there is a great need nationwide for computer science graduates.
So let me hop on that for a minute then. Mm-hmm. Some people will say, well, Dr. J, you've got to get students to go into STEM, mm-hmm. when they go into college. But from your perspective, is there a, do you got to get them ready to go fourth, fifth, sixth grade, grade school, high school? What's the... demarcation point?
I think that there is an importance in getting them interested in it at an early age. I do work with K through 12 with the dual credit courses, along with I do go and, you know, do little workshops with our Scribbler robots, which are little robots that they can program. So I've done a couple of those this year, one with Stanbury High School and then one with West Nottoway. And it's really fun to see the kids interacting with the robots and being engaged with them. And I think by doing that, you know, we're getting them interested at a younger age, and that hopefully will carry forward.
Well, it does sound like, 51% of all STEM-based jobs would be computer science, and then huge amounts of jobs. So obviously then there's a real need short and medium term, and we're offering a variety of programs. You mentioned the K-12 initiative and the connection to K-12. Mm-hmm. Maybe talk about that a little bit more.
Well, within that, we also work with the Northland CAPS program in Kansas City. I've been down there to visit them the past couple of years and taken the robots down there as well. And the Northland CAPS program, what that actually is where they use profession-based experience and work with industry members on a project. So I'm working with Kurt Kelly, the director, on a presentation for a conference coming up that is based around profession-based experiences. So it's really important that those students are also exposed to that within that program.
Listeners, you're listening to All Things Northwest on KXCB Maryville, KRNW Chillicothe. I'm John Jasinski, host of the program, and I'm visiting with Diana Linville, who's an instructor in the Department of Mathematics, Computer Science, and Information Systems here at Northwest. Diana, you mentioned Northland CAPS program. I think on this program we've talked about that being a consortium of Northwest Missouri State University, Metro Community College out of Kansas City, several school districts, and
Absolutely.
Several businesses driving these profession-based experiences. Mm-hmm. So obviously that connection to K-12, not just there, but as you mm-hmm. mentioned, Stanbury, mm-hmm. West Nottoway, et cetera, very important. But also talk about the number of women studying computing at universities. I know that that's been an initiative of ours, is trying to, you know, up the percentage of females going into the field.
Yeah, there's only about 25% of computing occupations that are held by women in the U.S. workforce. And so some of the things that we do here at Northwest to try to increase that or to support women within the field is we do have an organization called ACMW, which is Association of Computing Machinery Women, and I am the sponsor of that. And we try to allow that organization to be a support group for women who are in the field because they are in the minority. And so it can be intimidating for them to be in a classroom, you know, with all males studying a field that they may have never been exposed to before. So that is one way that we're trying to grow our numbers within the environment. Anyway, we have a MNCWIC conference. It's Missouri, Iowa, Nebraska, Kansas Women in Computing Conference that Dr. Carol Spradling is very heavily involved with. And the goal of that is to provide a low-cost way for women in computing who would not have the funding available to them to attend a conference and make connections and network with industry women. And so those are kind of the two initiatives that we have strong ties to.
Very significant. And of course, as I think about Northwest's history and Jean Bartik and, you know, the museum that we have here on campus. Listeners, yeah. If you haven't seen our computing museum, just incredible. And Jean really was a pioneer and has been discussed about being an innovator in some recent literature in Walter Isaacson's book. And I'm just very excited about you guys doing that for females to go into the field.
Yes, I can remember her visiting campus here and meeting her.
Yeah.
So,
just
phenomenal.
Incredible legend, and added so much to not just Northwest, obviously, but the entire industry, the entire world, indeed. Mm-hmm. So, Diana, you're the coordinator of three undergraduate programming courses. What's that mean, and what do you do when you coordinate a course?
Well, within our department, we do a lot of collaboration. And part of that collaboration is that we like to have consistency across the sections of our programming courses. And so as coordinator, I coordinate to make sure that the curriculum is the same, that the projects are the same, the assignments are the same. I also hire the TAs for those courses and work with them to make sure that they're fulfilling their job duties and so forth. Also keep the curriculum updated. So there, as technology progresses, it has to change with it. So keeping that curriculum updated is part of that too.
So obviously your responsibilities are vast. You talk about staying updated. You've recently been accorded a few honors, one being the 2015 Dean's Award for Excellence in Teaching here on campus in the College of Arts and Sciences, which is an extreme honor. Listeners, back in the fall, three colleges, three individuals received those teaching awards. Diana received one of them. Then one goes on and is named the Governor's Award for Excellence in Education from Northwest Missouri State University. And so Diana Linville is our 2016 recipient. What's that mean? That means that tomorrow, Diana, you'll be with the governor. The governor's giving statewide recognition to a variety of individuals from every state institution that are representing their institution for excellence in education, excellence in teaching more specifically. What do these awards mean to you?
Well, I'm very humbled to receive such an award amongst many great teachers that I know here at Northwest. Some have been my mentors. And so I was very shocked and surprised, but very honored as well. In my history a little bit, my mom was a teacher, my aunt was a teacher. So I have a lot of family members that have also mentored me along the way. And so it is a great honor to be recognized, and it's a great honor to be among those who have previously been awarded the Governor's Award, and also, just the work that my phenomenal colleagues, collaborate with me on. I feel like it's a tribute to them as well.
Well, it's very well said, because, honestly, knowing your colleagues and all the great faculty that have come before you and certainly with you right now, but the previous Governor's Award for Excellence in Education recipients, I mean, it's a who's who, in terms of names in the wall. Mm-hmm. So you join great company, but we're humbled to have you here and helping drive student success for every student every day. So why? Why did you receive the award? What did you do specifically to say, wow, Diana Linville? So talk about, what did you do in the classroom, outside the classroom?
I really don't know. I had a prospective faculty member ask me that. What gave you this award? And I really, truly, I don't know, because I know so many great teachers, and I'm not sure what made me recognized. I will say this. I think that hopefully my passion for my students was part of that.
You bet. So. Passion for your students, obviously staying on top of your game, staying current within the industry, being engaged with your students. I mean, all these things add up, right? So we congratulate you. We hope you have a great visit, and celebrate that honor. Make sure your family, holds you up on that pedestal and so on. And by the way, we need to kind of go back. You like to bake sweet treats, so give us an example or two.
Well, over spring break, I like to make cookies. I like to make brownies. I think it has to do with I have a sweet tooth myself. So, yeah, that's what I enjoy to do. I'm not much of a cook. I don't like to cook,
sweets. It's okay out there, right?
Yeah. But I do like to bake.
Well, Diana, in closing, what would you like our listeners of All Things Northwest to know about the field of computer science? Because I think for some of us, we think about computer science 20 years ago or 5 years ago, or it's changing so rapidly I can't even get my arms around it. So what do you want our listeners to know?
There is that stereotype of that you're in a little cubicle programming, and that is completely the opposite of what our students are doing in the world. They're making a difference. They're changing, you know, society in different ways with their, you know, skills. They're working with teams and collaborating, and it's just a phenomenal field to be in.
Well, it's phenomenal to have you here as part of All Things Northwest. Dinah Linville, thank you for joining our program.
Thank you.
That's Dinah Linville, instructor, Department of Mathematics, Computer Science, and Information Systems here at Northwest Missouri State University. Up next, we'll hear from Lieutenant Mike Sepperly. He is in the University Police Department, serves the University Police Department, and also serves as our Emergency Management Coordinator here at Northwest Missouri State. You're listening to All Things Northwest on KXCB Maryville, KRNW Chillicothe.
Support for KXCB KRNW comes from Family Eye Clinic in Maryville. Dr. Drew Garwood offers patients eye exams, diagnosis, and treatment of eye injuries, as well as glasses and contact lenses. More information is available online at familyeyeclinic.net or at
660-582-5222. Welcome back to All Things Northwest. I'm your host, John Jasinski. Our next segment features Northwest Missouri State University's Lieutenant Mike Sepperly. Mike is a lieutenant with the University Police Department and also serves as the university's Emergency Management Coordinator. Mike's a Maryville native. He attended Northwest prior to joining the Maryville Public Safety Department in 1988. He was promoted there to the rank of sergeant in 1992. And became the first field training instructor for all new hires of the Maryville Department from 92 until 1999. He did a whole lot at public safety with regard to community-oriented policing, training and enforcement standards, and also served as a firearms instructor. He worked in the private sector from 1999 through 2006, and then he joined Northwest and our University Police Department in 2006, serving as the field training instructor between 07 and 12. Following the tragedy at Virginia Tech, he developed the University Police Department's active shooter response training curriculum, and we'll talk more about that in just a few minutes. He has trained numerous local law enforcement officers as well as the area's state highway patrol and SWAT team members. In July of 2012, our listeners should note that Lieutenant Sepperly became the university's first full-time emergency management coordinator, and he's helped create so many great things, collaborations. I mean, it's just been incredible what Lieutenant Sepperly has done across policing agencies as well as the university. He does serve on the State of Missouri's Department of Public Safety Higher Education Subcommittee of the Governor's Homeland Security Advisory Council. Mike Sepperly, Lieutenant, welcome to All Things Northwest.
Thank you very much, and a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's great to have you, and listeners should know that Lieutenant Sepperly and yours truly, we do work together on a variety of subjects, and, you know, it's a pleasure, Mike, because of your expertise, and I just want to kind of get into your head a little bit about that expertise and how you see the field, not just yesterday and today, but even tomorrow. So let's just begin and talk about policing. How has the art and science of police work changed since you started in 1988?
I'd say there's been quite a few changes involved in policing since then, but probably one of the biggest changes that probably highlight the most of what we've done is probably technology and technology-related advancements. When I started with public safety in 1988, we didn't have computers in the office. You know, the electronic age was just coming about. The internet wasn't commercialized yet. Northwest had just switched flipped the switch for the electronic campus in 1987. So we didn't know the power and the benefits of what the internet and that age can bring until, you know, obviously later on down the road. And now, you know, the communication, the information that could be shared in a touch of a button. You know, an officer can be in the field working an accident or working an investigation and have data streamed to his cell phone and have that access. You know, we can talk to people, we can communicate with other police agencies, departments, you know, around the world. You know, that's incredible. The technological advancements in forensic science, the DNA extrapolation, you know, surveillance techniques, you know, self-defense techniques. It's just incredible, those advancements that I've seen in 28 years.
Wow. And, you know, it's amazing because as I'm through my mind's eye thinking through all those changes and what you're describing, obviously technology and then that impact on training and the personnel and so on. So very interesting. But let's talk about what drew you to the field of policing.
It was pretty much the overall desire to help people. I know that sounds like a cliche, but it's really not. I'm going to attribute that probably to my father. You know, he's a retired minister now, but he was in the preaching industry for, you know, 31 years. And being involved with that, watching him interact with people, growing up in the congregation, I think I developed a lot of attraction. I developed a lot of techniques from him and engagement and communication. And I developed a strong desire to get into the service industry. And it's really been a good fit. And when I got into public safety and law enforcement work, it was a challenge that really kind of benefited both that love of, and desire to help people and then also to make a difference.
Well, as you talk about helping people and making a difference, obviously you've done the policing side and you certainly have used technology over the years and provided all kinds of training across the Maryville Department of Public Safety and well beyond. But I want to really focus today on your role as Northwest Missouri State University's Emergency Management Coordinator. You know, interestingly, when I first arrived as president in 2009, it wasn't long after the Virginia Tech shooting, right? And then we named you as our first full-time Emergency Management Coordinator in 2012. How did we get to this position?
I think you're right. You know, at the time, in those early stages, you know, emergency management in higher ed was an afterthought. It was a developing position that institutions were realizing, hey, we need to move in this direction. And then when I got promoted in 2012, it was a really good fit. Emergency preparedness is a passion for me. And I think most people with a passion, they want to share that. They want to share their desires and what they feel with people. And in the field of police work and emergency response, you see how preparedness impacts people. And how their preparedness can influence how they react, how they respond, and how they recover from emergencies. So part of that passion is I want to help people get to that next level. If something happens, I want them to be able to respond to it quickly and protect themselves the best as possible. But mainly, I want to share my passion.
Okay, and so sometimes the mental model might say, well, it's an emergency situation based on, you know, an active shooter or something. But I think about at Northwest, for example, we had that huge icing incident where we lost, you know, hundreds of trees, and it was a tough time period. That would be an example of an emergency where, you know, someone needs to see that in advance and then plan for it. But also there are other emergencies taking place. Talk about how higher ed has learned across the, you know, college campuses across many emergencies. So give some examples on how we've learned.
I think, you know, I think you'll agree in the last several years has been kind of a tense time, I think, in higher ed, and it's been an extremely tumultuous time in law enforcement. You know, it's kind of feeling the winds of change, and I think it's needed across that board. But to me, the biggest takeaway from the last several years is the need for the university, the campus, to be engaged. You know, it's evident in law enforcement. Law enforcement needs to be engaged with the community, but it goes beyond that. It goes to you. It goes to the NLT. It goes to the leaders, the boards. And the things that you've done, creating the forums, the open discussions, you know, that is one of the main ways I think that we get that engaged and facilitate that engagement and get those discussions. You know, you call them those hard discussions, you know, that the probably the things you don't want to hear, but the things we need to hear. But giving students that opportunity to voice those opinions, to let them hear what's on their mind and what's bothering them, what's troubling them, and then we need to take that, have the wherewithal about us, and then the courage to take this back to our own departments, to our own agencies, and be able to water it down, to be able to digest it, and make the changes that we need to make ourselves better and make our services better for our community.
Sure. And, you know, living in Northwest Missouri and policing here, Mike, you think about Northwest Missouri State University as the example. Let's talk about weather as an emergency preparedness factor. So, Mike, let's talk about emergency situations at Northwest Missouri State University, one of them being weather. You know, we got through the winter season, and there's always, we're tracking weather patterns for snow. Obviously, here it is mid-April, and, you know, we're getting through the tornado season and all that. Talk about Northwest's approach to emergency management preparedness with regard to weather.
You couldn't pick an easier one, could you?
No.
Weather is always difficult because you don't know what to expect.
Are you a forecaster or?
Negative.
Okay.
But the nice part about weather is a lot of times we have advanced warning if something's going to happen. We have, you know, watches that conditions are, you know, favorable for a tornado. So it kind of puts us on watch. But, you know, what we try to do in those different seasons, in the fall, in the winter, in the spring, is try to put out messaging and information to our community, letting them know what to expect out of this season, and then what preparedness measures to take place or, you know, to take when that season or when that weather does come in and become impactful. You know, if we're talking about winter weather, you know, you're talking about trying to, if a storm's coming in and you know you're going to do some traveling, maybe that's time to adjust your time frame or maybe adjust your route. If you're not, make sure your car is prepared. You know, you got gas in the car. You know, you've got an emergency preparedness kit. You got water, maybe some non-perishable food items with you, a blanket, things of that nature. Springtime's coming up. If you're going to go out and do some traveling, if you're going to go out and do some watching sporting events, you know, pay attention to what the weather's going to do. Are they calling for rain? Are they calling for severe storms? And let that kind of impact your planning process. You know, if it impacts your travel, you know, you're paying attention to it, so you know where to pull off and take shelter, great. If you're getting to that sporting event, pay attention, you know, where are your shelters going to go? How are you going to get there? And, you know, what are you going to do if something does happen? So those are some preparedness measures that we can take now. You know, in our homes, you know, that same deal as this weather approaches is pay attention to any watches or warnings and information coming out. And, you know, have the same maybe emergency preparedness kit in your basement someplace that's protected. You know, water, non-perishable food items, maybe a NOAA weather radio so you can get information. And a first aid kit somewhere around. Those are some little things that we can do, you know, to be kind of prepare ourselves. But, you know, weather is always, like I said, it's changing, and you know they may call for a severe weather one day, and you know it doesn't happen.
And for our listeners of All Things Northwest, I'm John Jasinski, your host. We're talking with Lieutenant Mike Sepperly of Northwest Missouri State University's University Police Department, but also serving as the Emergency Management Coordinator. Mike, you've referenced NOAA radios, and I'm learning about NOAA and getting the NOAA website. That stands for?
The National Oceanographic and Aeronautics Administration.
Got it. So if you check that out, listeners, you can get a NOAA radio, for example. Mike, you talk generally about weather patterns, and then I think it's important for listeners to know that you and I, literally, but our team, our crisis management team here at the university, we have set procedures that we follow with regard to forecasts of snow or blizzard conditions, with regard to tornado watches, tornado warnings, et cetera. And there's a whole set of protocols that we go through and that we meet regularly, and we have regular check-ins, which I think are very important. So weather's one area of emergency management. Another one certainly is the whole aspect around active shooters and what might happen on a college campus. And obviously, you know, Virginia Tech set the stage for all of that back in 2007. We have focused on run, hide, and fight. We focused on secure, evaluate, and act. And it might be good for our listeners to know what that means when I say those kinds of things.
Like you were saying, the Virginia Tech tragedy in 2007 really highlighted with higher ed the threat of active shooters and the tragedies that will accompany that. So we really wanted to take steps to prepare. Between 2007 and 2012, I think we did a good job of getting information out and preparing our campus, but it was on limited scales. You know, we did presentations, we did one-on-one conversations, we did tabletop exercises, but you know, the message wasn't consistent. And depending on who was delivering that message, it wasn't consistent. In 2012, the City of Houston and the Department of Homeland Security released a training concept video called Run, Hide, Fight, which basically is a concept of what to do in the event of an active shooter. And it gives us options: run, hide, and fight. And it's incredible. It's a powerful, it's a short informational video that gives us these tools and ideas of what to do and gets us thinking. And, you know, it really resonated with us and what we were trying to bring to the campus and what the message we wanted to relay. So we wanted to bring the Run, Hide, Fight to campus, but I knew right off the bat that the video, which is shot in a work environment, it wasn't going to have a relation with our students on campus. So we wanted to bring that video and recreate it to our campus with our students and our faculty and staff, which we did to make that connection. And I think that connection was really good. But the nice part about that is it highlights we have options rather than doing nothing. These are things that we can do to safeguard our lives, those around us, and things to protect ourselves. Almost immediately with that, but like I said, that run, hide, fight is a concept. It's just kind of a general statement, a general overall. These are things to do. I wanted to drill down to the nuts and bolts, and these are, you know, this is how to run, this is how to hide, and this is how to fight. So I wanted to start working on individual training videos on that, get into that, the weeds of, you know, these are the techniques. This is what we're thinking about, the things to consider when we're thinking about running. These are the ideas behind hide. These are things to use, and these are the tactics behind fighting back. But it's taken several years to kind of develop that and get those videos out. But in that process, as we've been pushing out the run, hide, fight concept, is a lot of the questions have been coming in about it, and folks were asking, and some of the questions were consistent in, well, what do I do if I'm in a different location? Or what do I do if I'm not quite sure I'm hearing what I'm hearing? And so it kind of led to the development of a fourth video, which we call Secure, Evaluate, Act. And this video is kind of intended as a precursor to run, hide, fight. And these are instant or immediate actions that we can take as soon as we think something's not right, or as soon as we think we're hearing something that doesn't fit. And it's going to help safeguard our lives and our safety much faster than we could otherwise.
Well, and we should tell listeners that we required our students, our employees and our student employees, to go through the Run, Hide, Fight series. We've done the same with regard to employees and student employees on the Secure, Evaluate, and Act. And listeners, bottom line is that these videos are one tool that Northwest Missouri State uses for emergency preparedness, but we believe it's an important tool. And, you know, certainly, Lieutenant Sepperly, we believe that they help us be more prepared should something happen on campus.
I truly believe that.
So weather, active shooter situations, etc. There's a great number of emergencies that you could kind of talk about. As you think about our preparedness here at the university, what's the most proud area that you might be in terms of some of our efforts?
I think that's twofold. Probably the thing that I'm most proud of is the support of from the university, the support from the administration, from you, from the NLT, from the board, that as we come forward with ideas, as we come forward with training agendas, that support is there. That support is what can we do to help you with this and to take that and broaden it to the campus environment. And I talked to a lot of emergency managers across the nation in different institutions, and they're amazed at that level of support, because they don't have it. A lot of folks don't have that support with their administration. So they're fighting tooth and nail to get simple preparedness messages out to their campus, which is incredible. And the second part is, you made mention to the CMT, which is the crisis management team. And that's a group of leaders that are a cross-section of the university that get together on all load of different types of crises and emergencies at a moment's notice. We call these folks when something's happening, they all gather around a table. But the thing that I'm most really proud about is all these key leaders, all these important people are all around one table discussing an option, but they're all there for one reason, and that's the safety and welfare of the students in our community. And that they're all there for that benefit, and that's the only thing on their mind. And to me, that is just, it speaks about Northwest, it speaks about the culture that we've created, but it just all goes back to that support, and it's important to us, and it's to me, it just, it just touches my heart, really, to see these folks around this table, and then that's what they're concerned about, is those individuals and our students.
Well, I appreciate those comments, and, you know, as I think about emergency preparedness, I do feel like with your leadership, Lieutenant Sepperly and Chief of Police Clarence Green here on campus, our collaboration with the city and county and so on, you know, you can't ever say, you know, nothing bad's going to happen, because something will happen with regard to any kind of emergency, right? But I do feel like we sure do work hard and smart at providing as many proactive measures as we can. Let's talk a little bit about the future of emergency preparedness. What do you see at institutions like Northwest Missouri State? It's 2016, and the field has changed so much since 2012 when you assumed the position. But if you were to foreshadow in 17, 18, 19, 20, what are some things you might see here in the horizon?
That, in my mind, is a very difficult question, because the things that have changed just in the 4 years that I've been here, and emergency management is such a dynamic environment, such a dynamic job itself. I'm going to go back to the support, and follow me on this, is because we don't know what's going to happen. You know, is it going to be more training related? Is it going to be certain things that we have to, you know, implement, you know, such as we do tornado drills, we do fire drills? Are we going to be required to do active shooter drills campus wide? So it's going to come back to those relationships we have, I think, with those folks in the administrative level to support that and to help us implement that. But, you know, it's really kind of hard to gaze what is on the horizon for that, because it's such a dynamic environment.
Lieutenant Mike Sepperly, is there anything else you can provide for the listeners of All Things Northwest for them to be as prepared as possible for any sort of emergency?
I think the biggest message I like to get out is we all have an ownership in our own safety and our own preparedness. You know, we take part in our own situational awareness. Pay attention to what's going on. Pay attention to the weather alerts. Pay attention to watches, warnings. And, you know, take ownership in that. And that, in effect, reflects on our community.
Well, Lieutenant Mike Sepperly, thank you for your leadership, and thank you for joining All Things Northwest.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
And that's a wrap for this month's show. All Things Northwest is a program devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. We thank our guests, Northwest Missouri State's Diana Linville and also Lieutenant Mike Sepperly. Thanks, too, to our producer, Brandon Travis. We call him B-Trav for short. He's a student here at Northwest Missouri State University getting ready to graduate. And also, we thank KXCV General Manager Rodney Harris. Friends, take good care, treat each other well, provide good works for others, and keep celebrating and advancing our region. I'm John Chasinski, and thanks for your support of All Things Northwest, Northwest Missouri State University, KXCV KRNW, and Public Radio.
Support for All Things Northwest comes from Family Eye Clinic. More information is available online at familyeyeclinic.net or at 660-582-5222. Theme music for the program was composed by Northwest professor Dr. William Richardson. The music was recorded by vocal music education major Jordan Andrews, piano, music major Daniel Bates, bass, audio and production major Mark Ludwig, drums, and Dr. William Richardson, trumpet. The program is produced by broadcast production major Brandon Travis. Join us again next month for All Things Northwest.